to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JoeSpoto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here every Tuesday, Cincinnati.com beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, anybody else relevant to the news of the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play and also listen the moment a new episode posts on our must-have Inquirer Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the Bengals Beat Podcast. We're so happy to have you with us because the season's here, which just means that you get possibly beaten down versions of myself and my partner, Jim Osarski. Jim, what's your health meter at? Like, you know, we're playing whatever, insert your game here, Grand Theft Auto. You know, you just like stole a car and had to stab a hooker in order to complete your task. What's your health meter at today?
I'm not as familiar with Grand Theft Auto.
Health
meters in general. I'm like the dude in Mike Tyson's Punch Out where he's all like pink.
Yeah,
and he can't move, but he's still alive.
At least you're not like Glass Joe.
No.
You know where you just do that. You do that fetal position, standing shutter, and
right.
Then fall over to each side.
So it just means I'm about to rally. I need a lot more coffee.
Yeah,
And then I'll be good.
Yeah,
West Coast was good. Long, long trip there and back. It was like the Hobbit's Tale. There and back. Yeah.
The thing that people have to understand, and this is a little bit behind the scenes about, and we'll have lots of behind the scenes about what this last week has been, which has just been an insane week for us, for Bengaldom, for a lot of the stuff that we do. But, I mean, these West Coast trips are really hard on us. The team obviously flies out on Friday on their charter. They fly back right after the game on their charter, and they're back in their beds by whatever time, you know, 3, 4 in the morning. Well, for us, flying commercial, long story, we don't like to be feeling like we're getting freeze from them. We like to fly so we're separate and we can say whatever we want to say. And we're flying in very precarious situations. When you're coming back, and thanks to CVG, there are no direct flights from anywhere in the Bay Area back to here. So you are in some sort of labor. So we had a flight back. I flew from San Jose at 10 o'clock Pacific time after we got done, went straight with a stop at In-N-Out, of course, to the airport, then flew back, landed in Atlanta at 6:30 in the morning Eastern, and then hit a layover to finally get back to here by about 9:30 or 10, whatever it was. And it's just, that'll really sap you, you know? And then for you, it's the same way, except flying out the next morning, it's a whole day lost just in flights. So we're a little, that's why we're actually recording this on Tuesday morning, because we had to wave the white flag yesterday. Yeah. There's just no way we were getting the podcast in and not sounding like this was just two old men sitting on their porch complaining about the kids these days, because we were just going to be absolutely wrecked. But it was a good trip.
It was.
The Bay Area is great. Oakland is completely frightening.
Yeah.
And that is the worst stadium in football. Every single aspect of it is terrible.
Yes.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was it was my first trip there. I was surprised at how bad it was.
Awful. Traffic was the worst I've ever seen attending any game for any sport as a fan, as a scribe, at all. I've never seen anything quite so frustrating.
Yeah, it was great to see Oakland PD, Kareem El-Ghazar, our wonderful photographer, we carpooled, and we're watching Oakland PD watch the traffic jam.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, I think that dude's supposed to be in the intersection helping this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he didn't have any interest. And what was great was, you know, Kareem is telling us, you know, his photo workroom, all those great images you saw were put together in a
weight room.
In a weight room.
And not a good one.
No, and so he couldn't believe that the situation the photographers were put in. We said, Marvin Lewis gave his press conference in front of a rack of dumbbells.
He did.
Like, the leg extension machine is, like, right over his corner. It was crazy.
I absolutely could have worked my quads while transcribing Marvin. I mean, that was the setup in there. They just moved a couple of machines a little bit out of the way and tossed a couple of chairs in there. I mean, what a cluster. I mean, everything about it. That stadium is gone. No wonder they need to get the hell out of there, because it is just terrible. And you had a good tweet, I thought, before the game. If, trying to describe for those of you, and some of you actually went to Oakland. God bless you. Hope you're alive. Didn't get stabbed. That you said it had a Southside Chicago feel to it. You know, you grew up at Southside Chicago going to White Sox games.
Right.
You know that feel where it's a little too real in there. You
it
know?
Is. It is. Yeah. You are not. You do not feel welcome.
No.
Even if you're from that city, like if you're not. Like, that's the thing. Like,
I live here and I'm frightened.
Right. Which is very. Yeah. That was a vibe. For as bad as the amenities were, I still had understood the black hole and the fan base a little bit, and just like the anger and the absurdity of it all. I guess maybe not so much the crazy face paint. I mean, baseball's a different animal, but yeah, you walked in there and it was like you had to be committed to the silver and black. I mean, I give the Bengals fans their a whole lot of credit, especially the family, players' families, for showing up in that stuff.
There was, you know, you go to these stadiums, and you know, a high percentage of fans have jerseys of their team, but this was every single fan had the black and gray jersey. There was some of their white jersey. That's like old school, intimidating black and gray, and jeans,
right?
And a violent attitude.
Yes,
I mean, and it's one of those things you could just feel. You could feel it. You could see it, and you could hear it at the beginning of the game,
right?
And then an hour later, you just heard boos.
Yeah, they turned it on their own.
They
guys.
Turned it on their own guys,
which might be even scarier.
Yeah, you know, as the Bengals go, and we'll start to get into this game and looking forward to San Diego now. Anytime you can turn a home fan base to booing the home team by halftime, you walk out with the biggest swag that you have ever had, because that is the absolute goal. And they did. I mean, this was an efficient domination. We talked when we did our predictions on the site for before the game. You thought it would be a little bit more of a blowout. You had 24-10.
Yeah.
I had 24-20. I thought the Raiders, you know, with all that young talent, would show a little bit more. And the Bengals just rattled them. I mean, it was clear they were a young team who has a lot of figuring out to do still with a lot of new pieces. And this is what happens in the first week in the NFL, though. All the teams that caught all the headlines all offseason for changes deal with the ramifications of changes.
Right.
Of having things that are different, of players trying to adjust to new things. And the teams that have continuity roll. And this is why the Bengals have been so good in September in recent years.
Right.
Because they have continuity and they roll in September. They traditionally have done very well for that reason. And we saw it again. The Bengals, exotic formations, crazy stuff that they've built off of last year.
Right.
They found to be, I mean, you know, whether it's the linemen split out, which they did a little bit last year, but now they're running different plays where they're actually throwing it out that way, or, you know, huge shifts, or utilizing Eifert into four wide, and all the type of things that they've built off of. And the Raiders are just trying to scratch the surface on, can we complete a pass to Amari Cooper?
Right.
And it's just there are two teams that were clearly playing on different levels.
Yeah, it was and we thought that would happen. I guess what was most impressive to me, and I've been on the defensive train all offseason, I really feel that this defense is going to be good again. That said, they were really disciplined in their tackling. We can talk about lack of discipline elsewhere,
and we will,
but in terms of the fundamentals of breaking down, you know, and wrapping up a defender, you know, that's 80% of offense in this league now is making one guy miss or two guys miss or counting on
getting
poor form.
Space.
Yeah. And big plays happening, and I'll give the Bengals credit, especially in this new sort of, you know, last few years of an offseason where you don't hit, you're not allowed to tackle. Frankly, you're not allowed to practice it.
Yeah.
And
they really, I mean, they hit in any sort of real form 20 times a year, and really those other four are not as – preseason is not quite as
right.
intense.
So, I, you know, it was impressive – all the way around, even though time will bear out that the Raiders were god awful and that win in 9 weeks will look like, well, they probably should have dropped 40 on them.
Yeah.
But at least to start the season, you're right, Paul. I think it was, you know, on their end, aside from a couple, you know, post whistle activities, you know, it was nearly flawless.
Yeah. I thought it, piggybacking off the tackling, one thing that the Bengals should be really excited about, I thought, was the cornerback tackling. I mean, right. Oakland's whole scheme, and you'll see this a lot against the Bengals, particularly if Geno Atkins continues to play like we saw him back to the old Geno yesterday. I mean, just crushing it up the middle, and Carlos Dunlap having a lot of success coming around the edge, and them just doing a nice job rushing with just four. Teams are going to continue to want to do the quick hits to the outside, and the Bengals ate those up. Adam Jones had 10 tackles,
right.
But it wasn't like you would normally say, if Adam Jones has 10 tackles, it's you would normally say it was a bad day. But it wasn't, because the majority of those came within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage or for loss. Leon Hall with a couple of – I mean, he's just a pro. If you've watched Bengals football, you've seen Leon Hall do that over and over and over again. Nobody – sniffs out those wide receiver screens and makes the tackles as well as he does all over that. You know, that is a great sign for this team, because that's going to be what a lot of teams are going to try to do to them. And Adam Jones, you know, we are going to get very much into that situation. But speaking just about his play, had Paul Gunther called it maybe one of the best games that he's had with the Bengals, just because of the way he tackled. He covered well, but he tackled well. He was sure in that, and that's been a knock on him for a while. Give me something that you didn't like coming out of this game. Was there something that you kind of walked away, and not the post-whistle stuff that we're going to talk about later, but just as far as something that concerns you going into San Diego this week?
It would be, for as good as I thought the defense played, I would say I'll roll with those guys, because they weren't happy that Oakland dinked and dunked their way to two late scores. And the reason I put it on them and, quote-unquote, not finishing, you know, and I'm sure they would say that, giving up those two late scores. The reason I say that for this week is because Detroit was up 21-3 on the road and gave up 30 unanswered to the Chargers.
Yep.
And look, Phillip Rivers, and maybe you could say, hey, it's a natural thing. There were some subs out. You know, Sean Williams was in and Darquez Denard was in. So maybe there was your natural letdown late in a blowout. But as Marvin Lewis said, you know, later, that those things, you know, you can't just sort of ease up in the NFL. And San Diego's a team that if you ease up, you know, you'll get burned. They're too good. So I guess, but again, that's really nitpicking. I mean, they were pretty strong. I'm trying to think offensively, Paul, and
I think
they were solid.
You know, coaches, of course, on the Monday after are always of a big win, are always going
right.
to point out all the negatives. And so the one thing that we heard was the running game. Giovanni Bernard had a very nice day. He was able to find holes, but particularly in the second half when the Raiders, when everyone in the building kind of knew what they were doing, the Bengals weren't able to do anything in the run game.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of games this year where teams are going to try to sell out and force them to run the ball, whether it's because they feel like they have the cover guys that they're going to, you know, set up and go
right.
one-on-one and say, we dare you to beat us with Dalton and Green and blah, 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 or whatever. But they really weren't able to. And, you know, you have to really go back through it and really understand the game plan. Probably you pretty much have to be a coach, I think, but you know, on and off the record for a number of coaches and players and stuff, I heard them talk about running backs struggling with tracks. Marvin Lewis said it in his press conference. He thought they left a lot out there in the running game.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Hill said he left a lot out there in the running game as well after the game. So, which is kind of surprising here. I still don't think it's something you need to worry about. as far as the running game goes. But that was something that I think coaches said that they struggle with a little bit. And Jeremy Hill's numbers, I mean, 3.3 per carry.
Yeah.
Now, in the first half when they dominated, he was great.
Right, yeah. The second half, it kind of went away.
The second half, they stuffed him and didn't allow much. But I have a little bit of that. Here's another thing, and I want to get into this real quick, is the linebacker depth on this team, I wonder about. And then let me tell you why. You look at the snaps, and I wrote about this in Monday's walkthrough, just looking at kind of some of the positions and where they stand, just judging by playing time, where that's where you really tell how coaches feel about people. And if you want to know, Marcus Hunt and Brandon Thompson being a healthy scratch tells you how coaches feel about them right now. Vinnie Ray played every snap, and we saw this a lot last year.
Right.
If something were to happen to anybody amongst the starting group of linebackers, you get into a precarious situation. Yes. They do not have trust in Paul Dawson yet. Talked to Paul Gunther a little bit yesterday, trying to get a feel for, because Dawson played a couple of snaps in garbage time, and they said he rather than making parallels between him and Vontaze Burfict's rookie year was when Burfict came in week two and Thomas Howard got hurt and started and was incredible and led the team in tackling. He compared it more to Emmanuel Lemieux as far as understanding of the concepts and the system and what they need to be doing. Emmanuel Lemieux was on the practice squad the first half of his rookie season and finally started to break through and get a little bit of playing time around week 8, 9, 10. Eventually started a playoff game. So if you're looking for a time frame, all you got to do is those were the two comparisons that were put out there. He said it isn't quite like Vontaze. It's more like E-Man. That's probably how it'll play out. Paul Dawson will be ready. Judging by that, they hope by midseason. I don't know what you have until Burfict comes back, possibly in week 7, and we'll get more into that. I mean, you've got A.J. Hawk, Ray Maluga playing a lot of snaps, which you don't want that as much. You've got Chris Carter, who's basically a defensive end, who can cover you at linebacker in case you have injuries. I mean, you are susceptible there right now.
Yeah, that was, I think, and we've talked about this here on this podcast and elsewhere, that was the one area of the team that depth was a concern. And even, and not just depth, but just flat-out playmaking in a lot of ways with Maluga and Hawk aren't, I mean, they're run stuffers, they're assignment sure in those ways, but they're not going to be intercepting passes, you know, one-handed in the end zone like Kiko Alonso on Monday Night Football. Yeah. They're not, you know, Vinnie Ray against solid. And that was the talk about Chris Carter making this 53 was he was playing as a rush end despite the linebacker tag.
Yeah.
So it's a legitimate – you're right. It's a definitely legitimate concern, at least until Vontaze Burfict is healthy, but that's 6 games from now.
Yeah.
Which is a long way to go. With PJ Dawson, again, it sort of falls in line with everything we heard through all of mini camp and training camp in the preseason. For as good as he looked at times, I will say this about the Bengals coaches, they have been consistent with saying he is not there yet.
Yeah. I'd kind of like to see it. And I'm with angry Bengals Twitter on this one. I feel like we saw enough instinctual playmaking from him in his snaps in the preseason that I think that they should work him in a little bit.
Wouldn't it have – so in that case –
give him a series.
I was going to say, wouldn't it have to be in base where you put him next to a guy like
– like Vinny?
Yeah, Vinny or AJ and Ray, where you have veterans who you know what they're going to be doing, and you can maybe allow – you kind of clamp down a little bit on PJ's reads. I know he's instinctual.
Or give him
in the
a package.
Game,
give him a certain package where maybe when they do this, they have 5 or 10 concepts they like to do out of this. Give it to him and play him. And because Paul said yesterday he wants to try to cut down on Vinnie Ray snaps. He doesn't want him playing every snap. He's also playing special teams all over the place. You're gonna kill this dude. Right? And Vinny's a nice piece. You don't want him taking every snap and playing special. That's unfair to him, and it's not what this team needs to be. You got to explore your depth. This is the same thing that we saw last year, being scared to play some of the young defensive linemen he was unsure of because he's afraid of the drop-off, right? What ended up happening? The starters played way too many snaps, and all this talk about needing to get back to the rotation. I understand if you think there's going to be a big drop-off, but how do you know if you don't give it a chance? And these games, maybe you feel like you know because practice. But everything you hear about Paul Dawson is, P.J. Dawson is, he is not real good as a practice player, but when the lights come on, it's 11-on-11, the guy makes plays.
Right.
And he knows what he's doing. He looks good doing it out
and
there.
And he is, like, just to what we said, he is a playmaker.
Yeah.
Of all the, I mean, again, you're talking about a very solid group, but you're not going to see a whole lot of turnovers being forced and great pass breakups or even tackles for loss, to be honest. I mean, you know, Maluga can get in, can shoot a gap, but, I mean, P.J. Dawson is also a guy who can get to a handoff 4 yards in the backfield. So
I think he will be playing a my bold claim here is he will be playing a significant role, if not starting, by the end of this season. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get hurt, and we still don't know how Burbick's going to be when he comes back. But, you know, by that point, he's gonna. When he gets in there, I'm telling you, he's gonna make plays.
He'll have to, because Burfict even said he's like, you know, what player goes from missing an entire year to playing 80 snaps?
Yeah,
so even Vontaze knows that it's gonna be a little bit for him to work in.
Yeah, and that's a good. This is a good transition for us, because I want to go a little bit in some of the other stuff that happened this week, and that's gonna affect this team going forward and where this franchise is at. It was a busy week for us and those that work in the front offices. And a lot of it kind of got washed over a bit. Let's start with Burfict, because we had talked last week. The Bengals put him on PUP, obviously. But no one had talked to Vontaze Burfict by his choice.
Right.
Vontaze Burfict is very similar off the field as he is on the field. Kind of a, I don't know, insert whatever term you want here, kind of a jerky, little beef jerky, I don't know, whatever. You all can use your own terms, but he's a special person. So he has, you know, sort of done his best to stay out of our way and not want to talk about anything.
Right.
Well, you just... If you keep asking enough, you learn, right? We ended up having the exclusive. Jim was the only one to talk to Vontaze Burfict this past week and talk about where he was at. First off, let's bring that conversation to you so you can hear what Vontaze Burfict had to say, so you can get a feel for what the rest he feels like he's at and the rest of the year looks like for him. So here's Jim's exclusive conversation with Vontaze Burfict last week.
You know, on the conference call with Marvin, he said he's like, guys, we're so close. But he's like, in week 7, he'll be 100%. So what was that conversation like to decide that?
It was simple. I mean, you know, he just sat me down and asked me how did I feel, and I told him how I felt, and he just feels that I'm not all the way there in his eyes that he's been watching the last 3 weeks. You know, there's slight things I need to work on, and, you know, I was just more focused on my lower body. And now just putting everything together now, and, you know, 7 weeks, he thought it was going to be perfect for me to be back on the field. So, you know, now I'm going through my own little training camp, you can pretty much think.
Right. Was it frustrating at all? Because Coach rarely comes out and says it that specifically. Like, we were really close, and it was hard. You know what I mean? So for you, was it like, or did...
I mean, it's a good and a bad thing to it, because, you know, I always want to get on the field and play. You know, just being competitive. But, you know, he doesn't want to go out there and rush anything back and then end up hurting something else, and I understand that. So, you know, it was just good thinking on him, and, you know, he wants my career, not just one or two games. So, you know, but, you know, I'm looking forward to playing the Steelers, and, you know, that's my goal.
How do you feel, though, I guess? I mean, is it, do you feel like, hey, I would have been ready in a week or two? Or is it just like, nah, I'm...
I don't know. That's something you have to ask Marvin. But I feel good. You know, I feel better than when I had the first scope. That's why I had to get the microfracture, because I had to get the scope at first. But now I feel better than, you know, what I did before. So, you know, just keep going day by day and trying to get to 100%.
So now that you know the date and there's that bye week in between the practice and it's Pittsburgh, all that, I mean, are you What is that like, that anticipation? Because it's like, there it is. Like, yeah. You know it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was planning on playing on game one. It didn't happen. But, you know, now it's game seven. So, you know, I'm just getting my mind and body fully ready, getting conditioned. And, you know, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a tough game. You know, who hasn't played in a year and then come and play 70, 80 snaps in one game? So I'm just looking forward to just, you know, contributing as much as I can.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chris.
So there's Vontaze talking about, you know, how his optimism, but his reality. I thought that the interesting thing about the conversation was the reality that you just talked about, that he understands that it's going to be a process. And he sounds like a guy that's kind of wondering what it's going to look like as well when he gets out of there.
Right. Yeah. It definitely was interesting. And he, you know, wasn't, and that was, I guess, a surprise for me, Paul, was, you know, there was no surliness. Usually, you know, sometimes when you talk to a player about injury, and you know they will push it off on coaches. Oh, it's coach's call, and then when the coach makes the call, sometimes that guy's not happy. And while of course he said he wanted to be out there, you know, there was he seemed to roll with it, and there wasn't going to be an issue in that regard. You know, where you got a guy kind of stewing for 6 weeks, like I could be out there or 3 weeks. You know. So yeah, and you're right. That reality, you know, Marvin Lewis said we feel he'll be 100% for Pittsburgh November 1st.
Right.
And that may be the case, but it'll take a little time after that for true football conditioning and being able to play entire games.
Yeah. So how did you do this? Which is the question that every single person in the media around here, including the PR people for the Bengals, wanted to know afterwards when we had that story that afternoon. How the hell did you do this?
Well, a couple things. One, as you said, I've asked Vontaze Burfict, as the new guy, and Geno Atkins are guys who I literally ask every day.
Yeah.
In some form of conversation. Now, don't misunderstand it, BBP listener. I'm not harassing these guys. It's usually in a fashion where it's just like, hey, are you going to talk today? You open today? I mean, we could literally be walking past each other at a locker, and it's either a head shake or a no or whatever, and we move on. So the Bengals locker room, the linebackers are in a corner, and they're kind of behind, depending where you're standing, a pole and a Gatorade machine.
Yeah.
So they're kind of hidden in a way, and Tez is in the actual corner.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm over there, and I'm talking with Chris Carter just about whatever. And Tez just happens to be there. And it was getting close to the end of the locker room, and I think, at least to me, I couldn't see. A lot of the other scribes either headed out getting ready for Marvin or were behind that pole or something. And Tez was there, and I just – and again, as usual, hey Tez, you up today? And he turned around.
Yeah.
And usually in the locker room, again, a little insider for people, you know, when guys are in the locker room, if their back is turned, if their face is in their locker, it's sort of the universal symbol of I am not speaking right now.
Yeah.
But he had kind of like opened himself up, like he was about to get on his hoverboard. Yeah. And I just like,
that's the other thing now. We have to judge where they are in relation to their hoverboard
right.
Because they can always just hover away from you.
Yes. Yeah. So it was just, you could say it was good luck, good timing or whatever. But again, it was just one of those things where, you know, I think, in our business, Paul, we don't always want to feel like we're asking guys all the time. I mean, it's irritating for us as well. But I think it just worked out.
Yeah, it did. And I think a thing for a lot of these players is they don't want – if you start talking to one person, then the swarm of cameras and TV people, and it becomes a whole thing. And if they want to avoid that for the most – I mean, it's human nature. You just
right. –
It makes everyone clench up when all these cameras come on and the lights flip on and it's like you're on stage all of a sudden. You know what it's like? I'll tell you what. It's story time. When I worked and lived down in Key West, I was there when they were filming the Real World Key West. and so at one point, I'm out at a bar down there. And we're just – it's a normal night, having dinner, having a drink. Now, a couple of the people that were there, because they don't have TVs or access to anything in the house, there's some dude from Seattle or another guy wanted to go watch the Supersonics. I think they were still Sonics at that point. This was pre-Thunder days for my kids out there. So they wanted to go watch Sonics play. So they had to come to the sports bar that we happened to be at. So, and a bunch of them ended up coming. And there was the crowd fills in as the night goes on, as you have every single night in Key West. Doesn't matter what night it is. And so it gets crowded. And the camera people are there,
But they're just kind of – there's some few of them sitting outside. There's a couple of them roaming around, but they don't have their cameras up. All of a sudden, one of the girls gets into a conversation that must have been important with someone else right next to me, like sitting right next to me. And the cameras swoop over. Boom, the lights come on, and it's like you now know that this is something that they are interested in using. And it happens so fast, everyone just kind of freezes and freaks out, right? It's just a natural
right.
No one
hence
likes
the term
that.
Deer in the headlights.
Yes. I mean, right. It was, and it was shocking to me, and I knew that they were in the room. And of course, I'm very familiar with reality TV,
right.
I'm a big reality TV buff that I am. But it's just that's what it is, and it makes you say and do stupid things. And
so what are you trying to say? You got? Do you have a Screen Actors Guild card now?
Well, I wasn't. I didn't make the cut.
You didn't make the cut.
Now I have been on reality television before, though. I mean, I should. I've been on shows. I was on a show called Playing for Peanuts, which was about the Independent League South Georgia Peanuts when I lived in Albany, and. I was on multiple episodes. One, because Wally Backman was the coach. This is such a long story. I can't quite go into all of this, but he was a very controversial drunken figure in this show. And let's just say this league was a startup league that was so corrupt. I can't even tell you. And we would just crush them on a daily basis. So the South Georgia Peanuts were in the championship, and the SCL. President commissioner revoked my credential, right? It was this big deal because we had been ripping them for all the money that they were stealing and teams that were losing. And it was everything about it was bad. The league folded, by the way, immediately after the season. So I went and wrote from the stands. The column was titled Live from Row B, Seat Section 132, Seat A, or something like that, right? And it was just me sitting there writing from down there. And so the cameras, like, followed me all the way in, buying my ticket, going down. And I was, you know, but I kind of came in intermittently throughout the series. If you'd like to watch, my parents have the entire, 8-10 episodes that I think you can buy for about $3 now, maybe on Amazon if you're interested. But I'm a reality TV show star in that for that fact. I mean, I'm just – you should recognize –
which it sounded like they were about to make you a – based on actual events, Law and Order.
Oh, it's possible.
which that's more my speed.
Yeah. Anyway. Which, by the way, Law and Order – John Oliver had a big Law & Order theme going on this past Sunday, which you need to check out. Because if you don't know, Jim loves to watch Law & Order until all hours
all
of the
all
night.
Hours.
All hours. If there's a marathon on, like, Jim is locked into it. So you might want to check out John Oliver as well this week. All right, we've gone tangent enough on our Law & Order. Perfect. Let's, in a perfect segue, talk about Adam Pac-Man Jones as we talk Law & Order. Ching ching. We need the Law & Order sound. I might bring that in. So, let's talk about Adam Jones. What the hell is he thinking? Okay? First of all, I don't think any of us can quite answer that outside of rage. In case you didn't see it, if you're listening to this podcast and didn't see it, I don't really know what's going on the rest of your life. But, you know, he has – the play was they were running down a long run. Amari Cooper, what provoked it, pops Adam Jones with his left hand under his chin and face mask as part of a block. But, I mean, it was unnecessary. I mean, it wasn't – it certainly wasn't NFL football by the rules and by how they teach it. Right up under his face, and basically punches him in the chin. Adam just flips the switch. He goes Pac-Man.
Yeah,
he went crazy as Marvin Lewis called him last year, an angry Doberman on game day, and throws him to the ground, hulks out completely, rips his helmet off, picks his head up, and slams it onto the back of the helmet with intent to injure. And the ref is right there. I mean, the ref is basically touching Adam on the back, looking at it, throws the flag, and does not eject him, but gives him a 15-yard penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. How the hell did he not get ejected for that?
Yeah, it was
unless
weird...
the angle was hard for the ref from above.
It was strange because the flags didn't come out until actually he slammed his head.
Yeah,
because there were no flags as he was sitting on top of him. You know, so it was even in the moment. You know, you and I looked at each other in the press box. Was just like, what's the precedent for this?
And
the first thing that came to mind, just because I'm not as familiar with all the sort of the minor players throughout the league, but the Albert Hainsworth, you know, foot stomping.
There's a lot of stomping that's happened.
Yeah, a lot of stomps that happen. And it just, you know, obviously, is, you know, there were no cleats involved, but it was the first thing that came to mind because it was a defenseless player on the ground with no helmet.
Yeah. And it just clear, violent, malicious. You know, it wasn't something that happened where you get a headbutt where you just happen to be getting up in a guy's face. This was malicious grabbing of head, purposefully slamming against a helmet. I mean, I had some people say, oh, that's part of football. There is nothing that this had anything to do with football the way it's supposed to be played at all. And so the question becomes, he's going to get fined. We all know he's going to get fined, and that's not in question. Should it be more than that, though? I mean, who knows with league suspensions anymore? Now we end up in this territory of they're making it up as they go along, so who the hell knows what it's supposed to be? And, you know, I'll listen to the fact that it was retaliation for something for a half a second before I throw it away. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what led up to this because it wasn't as bad as egregious as this. This was taking it way over the line. At a certain point, if you are going to spend your whole offseason preaching about the need to get rid of post-whistle fighting.
Right.
This has been a point of emphasis.
Point of emphasis.
At the owners' meetings when I was out there in Arizona, we heard about this over and over again. Throughout the preseason, when all the fights were happening, these joint practices, we heard all about this, how important it is. So if you're going to do all this, and let's not even touch on player safety.
Right.
And concussions.
Head trauma, right.
I mean, we're not even touching on that here.
This would have been a hockey situation. If Amari Cooper would have been knocked out in that moment and just laid there limp.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking, you know, Adam Pac-Man Jones isn't around for a long, long time.
Right. But, I mean, that was the intent of that move. How could that anything other than that be your intent when you grab a guy by the head, when you have him pinned down? MMA doesn't even allow that.
Right.
And you slam him against a helmet that's hard as a rock. It's like a curb stomp without, you know, the teeth. I mean, I don't know. And maybe we're taking it too far. I just have never seen that in a football game before. And I don't know how it doesn't get some sort of suspension. Early in the week, you know, if you're listening to this later, you might already know the answer to this. But early in the week, Pro Football Talk reporting that there won't be a suspension. Their source says it would just be a hefty fine. I was looking for precedent. You know, Eric Walden a couple years ago got into it with Delonnie Walker, ripped his helmet off, threw it down, and went up and purposely headbutted Delonnie Walker. And he got a one-game suspension, and it was upheld. What is the difference? Helmet ripped off, violent, malicious contact made between head and helmet. What is the difference? There is none.
Yeah.
So that should be a suspension then. If there's precedent, if you're looking for things that have gotten suspended before, is that not the same thing? It is. And I'm not going to be convinced otherwise.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, the NFL is...
And we'll see what happens. Maybe they do suspend it.
Right.
We'll see what happens. But to me, I mean, it was just egregious. And you know, I like Pac-Man, actually. I like Adam Jones. And I think the reforming of his life thing is a real thing. And people will now cast him back as that guy. And he's clearly has a temper. He's clearly a crazy person on game days. And I think he would openly admit that. I don't think this is a reflection on the changes he's made in his life and all that stuff. He looked like a bad dude there. And he turns into this person on game days. And that's, scary. I think this team kind of likes some of that. I don't think this is a reflection in that way, but this was bad. And if you're the league, I think you cannot tolerate that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It'll be, it will be interesting because especially, you know, even post game, he was still kind of in it. I mean, he admitted, I was caught up in the moment, but I was protecting myself. And again, it's.
But I'm glad you brought that up, because let's bring in that audio. So here was. This is the other. That's the other part. It's not like there's. I apologize to Cooper, right. And I was at a blah blah blah. No, this is what it was post game. Here's Adam Jones.
What happened on the play with Cooper? What led to
the whatever you're saying, that's what happened. I'm not gonna get into all that, but I here to play football. I don't back down from nobody, and I ain't out trying to start it. So I'm just out playing football.
How tough is it? You know, sometimes you're just in the moment. You know?
That I was in the moment in that play, but like I said, I'm just out playing football. So if I'm not out to do that. I don't want to hurt my team by no form or fashion, but I got to make sure I protect myself, period. But.
Could you have expected any more from this team, really both sides of the ball? I mean, if things really
We
well.
Came out playing on all cylinders today. I think we had a great game plan, and I think we matched the intensity from the beginning to the end. You know, we let it slip a little bit right there at the end, but for the most part, I think we matched their intensity.
You guys always talk about getting off the fast start. You come out here week one. How important is it for you guys to get out of here?
It was good, man. It was good for the whole team, good for the city. First time we beat them, you know, I was going to say that now. I wasn't going to say nothing before the game. But since we got the W, you know, it's always good to go back home with a W.
Sorry to even ask about this. The play that happened down here.
I just told your ass.
I came in late. I'm sorry.
All right, whatever happened, happened. We're going to leave that where it was at. I ain't got nothing to say about it. If he want to talk about it, let him talk about it.
What do you do? Play with Carr, and forced the fumble. You know, did he try to slip on you or something? Apparently,
yeah, I think he did. And when he slipped on me, his hand slipped, and I think it went this way instead of this way. So I'm just out playing football.
Right, right. The big play, though, right? Yeah, got the ball. I mean, pretty much. Then
I'm just having fun. Just having fun.
How important was that, though? Because not only did the fumble stop the first down, then you guys were able to get the fourth and one conversion, and obviously the team scores right after that.
Just having fun. It was a good day for us today.
And there will be more opportunities for us to ask him if he has regrets or wants to apologize, and we'll have all that for you on Cincinnati.com. But, you know, for now, we'll wait and see.
Right.
We'll wait and see what ends up coming down with the league. So that's off the field stuff as we go forward and see if Pac-Man will be available versus the Chargers. Well, he'll definitely play for the Chargers because he probably would appeal. But AJ Green. And not just AJ Green, but everyone that had contract situations, which we've been talking about all offseason, right. What would happen with all of these expiring contracts, who would get their deals. We learned one. One yep. will, and AJ happened Friday in the midst of absurdity. I mean, just an insane day where you are flying out to Oakland. You're in the air. I'm on the ground in the locker room and talking to Marvin Lewis after practice. During all of that, the last bit of they're trying to hit a deadline, which was wheels up.
Yeah.
Wheels up to Oakland, which was about 4 o'clock, but they were loading the buses at 3.
Right.
And it was 1. And they were still talking, trying to get it worked out.
This was close, people. I mean,
yeah, I don't think people understand. Like, there were legitimate issues to get over Friday at lunchtime,
right?
And
as AJ Green's in walkthrough,
right?
I mean, you know, granted, players don't negotiate their own deals for the most part, but still, I mean,
let me just say this: I don't know that I've ever. This may happen, but I had never actually seen it of a player take his cell phone out to walkthrough, but AJ did.
Yeah,
he had his cell phone and he was looking at it and put it in his pocket and went out to walk through. I'm pretty sure that players don't take their phones to practice, but that's what we were talking about. That's where it was at. I mean, this was close to not happening and bringing up a scenario that nobody wanted to see. There would have been a definite ripple effect over that. I thought it was weighing on AJ throughout preseason a little bit, and he admitted afterwards. I will bring you after we talk a little bit more about this. What AJ said at his press conference talking about this, because AJ Green typically doesn't say much. Anyone that's listened to this over the years knows that we rarely have him on here. When we do, it lasts like a minute, and he's very short with his answers. Pretty good after a game. He typically doesn't like to say a lot. He's a quiet guy. He's not a high-profile guy. That's his thing.
He's not going to have a reality show.
If he does, it will be canceled very quickly. He'll need me on it. He will need me to bring up the ratings, all right, with my reality credentials. But when we were going to this press conference, we figured we'd get here, you know, a couple of quotes and get out of there. it was the best he's ever been. The most open, the most reflective that I've ever heard AJ Green. He was incredible. And it was about, what was it, like 10 minutes? And I'm going to bring you the whole thing. I want you to hear all of it. And you get really good insight into the psyche of this team's star wide receiver and what he's like as a person and what this means to him. We'll get into that. But so you break this story from about 30,000 feet. I mean, you know, again, local people don't typically, and this is, this is a little bit of back padding here, but local people just don't break these very often. Agents feed the same national people that they do. And that's just the way it is. That's how this stuff gets out there. So for you to break this story and do it from a plane, hashtag breaks on a plane, is one of the most badass things I've seen. I gotta say, it was awesome to watch.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, it was crazy. You know, obviously, knowing that this was going to be news at some point in one way or the other. You know,
we've been on this.
Yeah,
forever.
We've been on it. Yeah, you've been on it since before I arrived in April, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, been a tag team ever since. And yeah, it just so happened. Yeah, you're kind of trading emails and you're talking to people and you're. I couldn't really text, so it had to be email, which was a little iffy at, like, Wi-Fi way up there, which is, like, in and out, and, you know.
Go in-flight, man.
Yeah,
huge.
So it was just kind of.
Worth the expense.
Right. So it was, it definitely, and it was as hectic as it sounded in the build-up there with down to the wire, and it was, you know, just hearing from different people. And what was interesting, Paul, was that there was very little national chatter, mm-hmm. which sort of. It meant that, you know, AJ's representation was actually working on it. You know,
unsure.
You weren't getting like
unsure.
You weren't getting the leaks. You weren't getting these, like, you know,
getting what, close.
Exactly. It was very quiet.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was. And you're right, on the national perspective. It's funny because I think, you know, we sent the first tweets and then it was 4 minutes later. Mm-hmm. You know, the national guys, which in the Twitterverse is like, you know, 9 years.
And let me rant real quick.
Yep.
Okay, because...
And we had a story at Cincinnati.com, too. It wasn't just a tweet and a dump. I mean, we had content and...
Exactly, which we were waiting on for it to be official. Because we write stories when it's happening.
Right.
Okay? Not when, it looks like maybe it might, should, all that garbage, blurry words, which you saw scattered across other local sites that I will not talk about Thursday. Oh, it looks like it maybe, and guess what? It didn't on Thursday. All that spec. No one talks about the garbage thrown against the wall that didn't actually happen, and no one has the story that we had that had everything. And that stuff drives me nuts, and that's what causes fans to freak out. So if you want to know what's really happening and that it is happening or has happened, you follow us.
Right.
If you want garbage thrown against a wall. And wonder and get using words like maybe, likely, could be, then you can read anything else. Because that's what happened on Thursday. And it caused everybody to think. And like you said, this was a last, maybe there was a thought that it could. We all knew it could happen.
Right.
We all knew that they were going to be that negotiations were going to ramp up. We've been saying that for months. And wrote about it on Monday about the clock ticking on this thing and about the deadline being when it was. And all of a sudden, somebody comes in here and says that talks are heating up and there's a chance is not news.
Right.
It only riles up everybody. Off soapbox. I'm done with that. So point being, we broke it when it actually was happening. When things are really happening, we had it.
Right.
And crush it, because not only did we have that news, but maybe one of the most important ripple effects, and you had this in Tuesday's walkthrough, was about the other signings. This kind of got lost in the weekend.
Right.
Was that everybody else went without a contract.
Yep.
And you better believe that not everybody is happy about that.
That's true.
I mean, there we have talked about this as there's one thing that could derail team chemistry in any locker room, in any sport. It's people that are mad about their money. And I think there was a thought that more deals would get done.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or they should. At least players would want that.
Yeah, the Bengals entered this before the Green extension, I think, with about $17 million to play with under this year's cap. So, you know, that helps you with some signing bonuses, some raises, and then $50 million in next year's cap.
Mm-hmm.
So even after Green, the way they kind of prorated things, I think, you know, in Tuesday's walkthrough, it was about $9 million left for this year
mm-hmm.
and 39-ish in the next year. So there was still money out there. It just, you're right, Paul, though, like with the other 11 projected starters, I think when we went into the season, nobody, you know, the team only really entertained about a half a dozen guys, mm-hmm. Adam Jones being the only veteran,
yeah,
you know, among the starters who are going to be UFAs. And it just, and when I say there were talks, like it was, from what I came to understand from both sides of the table, it was, this is what it is.
Take it or leave it.
And that was the talk.
Yeah. Because the other side said, well, that's not what it's going to be.
Right. And so here we are.
And here we are. And that doesn't mean that next March you won't see them be able to come to find. I mean,
right.
You know,
right.
I mean, look at what they did this past year. They signed all the Clint Bowling and Ray Melo, blah, 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 and they have a ton of cap space next
right.
year that will be available. Now, but they had to figure out AJ Green first. And I think a lot of what happened here was all the problems that they had coming to terms to the final hour ended up sacrificing anything getting done with other guys because
right.
they had to evaluate how much this was actually going to take out of their chunk for this year and structuring, and then for next year and first however many years of the contract, all that stuff. So that's probably what happened. So everybody but AJ Green is going to go play through their contract year this year,
right.
whether they like it or not. And some like it, some don't.
Right.
So that's where that's at. But I promised you AJ Green. So I want to bring you AJ Green. And like I said, AJ, you just don't, he's a quiet guy. You don't normally hear a lot from him. And he really opened up. So I just thought it was great. And so I want to bring you that, and when we come back from that, we'll wrap this up. So here's AJ Green.
You glad it's over?
Yeah. It's big relief, man. Go out there and play freely and don't have to worry for any, I mean, worry about anything. I'm just, it's a blessing. You know, thank the Bengals organization for giving me the opportunity in the first place by drafting me. And it's coming around for the second time, man. It's just an honor, blessing, humbling. Words can't describe how I feel right now, man. I'm just so happy, so.
You don't seem to be the kind of guy that slides into the neutral after you get your money. Does this motivate you to get after it big time?
Oh, yeah, man. Herb was just talking about this. You know, when you first come out, it's all off potential. What they think you're going to do. And now, you know, I've proven myself a little bit. And now I got to keep pushing. I got to keep getting better. But, you know, this never was about the money with me. You know, I don't play this game for the money. The money is, you know, extra, you know, just another extra thing. But I play the game because I love it. And I want to be great. And I want to put on that jacket one day, and that's why, you know, that really motivates me, not the money part. So this just going to take it up to another level. So
how excited is your family? A lot of money in a short period of time, huh?
Right. I first person I was calling was my parents, and I called my dad. He was out there cutting grass. So I was like, yeah, I was like, just got a deal. And he was like, oh, I'm so happy, so excited. And I called my mom. She was at work. And she's screaming in the background. So they're both very excited. And I'm glad I could, you know, definitely sign this deal and you know, honor them and, you know, get them some things they wanted or whatever. But it's just a blessing.
Was it hard over the last however long not to let this kind of weigh on you, hang over you a little bit?
It wasn't too hard. You know, one of my best friends is Justin Houston, and he went through the same process. And you know, I talked to him daily, every day, and how he handled it. And you know, he kept me focused. Just telling me, AJ, you got money in the bank. I didn't have anything, and I had to go through the same thing. So, by talking to him every day, and you know, keeping my focus, he always telling me not to worry about it, and just go out there and play, keep doing what I'm doing. It really helped.
To worry about it now, but would that have been a tough thing to try to play through the season with just having, you know, playing on the option like that?
No, I don't think it would have been tough. I think, you know, once I got to the game weeks and the season, you know, everything will go out the window. I'll just go out there and play football and let my play take care of everything else. But it's a big relief that it's over.
Did you say Mike was inevitable all along, or as it got closer to the start of the season, did you have doubts it was going to happen?
At first, I had no doubt that I thought I would have to play out this year. I didn't know. I was just preparing for the worst and just hoping for the best. So I didn't think it was going to get done. And definitely, I didn't think I was going to get the deal that I got right now. So, but it's a blessing. Like I said, it's definitely a blessing.
Did you, in your representation, feel like the parameters were set? You know, I mean, guys were getting deals, so, you know, kind of where you fell.
Once Julio deal was done, then we felt a little better about the situation we were in, and but it was still taking time, just to iron out some little things. But once Julio deal was done, then stuff really started to heat up. So.
Well, why do you feel that is? Is it simply because, say, draft year or something?
Yeah, I think in with all four of us, three of them being done before me, you know, the numbers were pretty set, you know, what I should get or whatever. But, yeah, once everybody else was done, then I had no doubt that it wasn't going to get done.
Did you want more than them?
I'm the last one. I think I should get more than them. But, no, I would just want to be fair. I just wanted to be fair, and you know, they did right. The Bengals did right by me by this deal, man. And we both feel happy about it, my agent and I. And I know the Bengals feel great about this deal as well. So I think it's a win-win for both clubs.
When did you think you would get it? You said you didn't think it was going to happen. When did you think it would happen?
I thought it was going to get done coming into last week. Everything started to heat up more, and then Katie, and my agent. Start talking a lot and stuff started to heat up. So that's when last week was the first time I was like, okay, it's really going to get done now. So
you've always been a great representative of the Bengals. I mean, are you excited about, it sounds like, you know, your career, you're going to be a Cincinnati Bengal for your career, hopefully.
I'm very excited. Just looking down the road, you know, I always want to win a Super Bowl here and put this city in the best situation. I mean, position to win a Super Bowl. But if you look at those guys who put on the jacket, it's always those guys win Super Bowls, at least one, and been with the team their whole career. And that's what I'm trying to get. So I'm so, you know, blessed and honored that the Bengals, choose to keep me around for another 5 years. So.
What about Cincinnati, this organization, has been a reason why you want to be here, why it was important to stay here?
Like I said, they drafted me, and this is all I know. You know, if you know me, I don't like change. I like to be comfortable, and if a lot of people know that, I don't like to be changed. I don't like to be put out, go anywhere else once I've been here for a while. And it's very important for me because, you know, I love it here. I think the city, you know, represents who I am. Very low key, you know, not a big market, and we don't want to be a big market. And that's who I am. I'm not a big athlete, profile athlete. I just go out there and play my game and then go home. and I think that's the representative of the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, we fly out of the radar, a lot of people, but we've been to a playoff 4 years in a row. And the last couple teams that did that is what, the Denver freaking Patriots and somebody else. So a lot of people take these winning seasons for granted. We haven't won a playoff game, but we have winning season here. So I think the next step is just taking that getting over that hump and we'll be fine.
What does this mean as far as you and Andy now as well? He's obviously locked in to 2020, you're locked in to 2019. It's like that foundation is kind of set.
Oh man, it's great. Coming in with Andy, having a guy to grow with over time, it's definitely beneficial. He know me, I know him. We've been together since day one, and I think that's the biggest thing for us is we're the leader of this offense, and they go as we go. And we have a good game, then we hard to stop. And I think that's the biggest thing. But we got a lot of room to get better, you know, on my part as a receiver and understanding the game more and just going out there and just playing and not thinking about nothing, and this really helps. So
you mentioned that in the beginning of the season, people kind of forgot about you a little bit because of, you know, injury last year and everything. You're like, you know, you had a little chip on your shoulder. It seemed like now with this contract, people have forgotten about you, man. You're going to have a target on your back out there. But is that still inspiring you?
Oh, yeah. I just, like I said, man, I felt like they forgot about me last year. You know, just what you said about the injuries. You know, due to all the other receivers had great years, but I think I'm still elite, and I put up 1,000 yards, wouldn't missing 6 games. So I'm just, like I said, this whole offseason, that's all I was focusing on, and getting better and staying healthy, just trying to stay healthy. But yeah, it's definitely a chip on my shoulder to get out there and get back to the old 2014 AJ. With no injuries and go out there and put my team in the best possible position to win a game. So.
I know you say it never was about the money, but was there still a point in time when you were growing up, when you were dreaming, not just getting into the league, but having a chance to be one of the league's highest paid players at your position? Is that still something that kind of crept into your mind a little bit?
When I was younger, I didn't know how much NFL players got paid. I just wanted to play in the NFL because I loved the game, and this was a job. I never knew the prices or what the receivers was getting paid. I never looked up contracts and anything, so I just wanted to play, and I think that really helped me out because I love the game. It don't matter how much I get paid, I'm going to always give 100% or, you know, practice hard. This contract is not going to change anything. I'm still going to be the same AJ. So I don't think it. I think it's just a bonus for me to be financially set, and my family be taken care of for the rest of their life. But it's not going to change who I am on the football field.
Do you think that mentality has helped humble you? You know,
it's obviously
you're
pretty humble. Yeah, I think it did. But I've been a humble guy since day one. So this contract is not going to change anything. I'm still the same old AJ. Just got a little bit more money.
We gotta let him get ready to get on the plane here. Are we done?
Thank you.
Yep.
Congratulations. Thank you, man.
And now we don't have to ask you about it anymore, right?
Thank you.
All right, so there's AJ Green learning a little bit more about a guy. Doesn't like change, doesn't like high profile, very quiet, under the radar type. Just like the team that he plays for. Very, very symbiotic relationship in that way, and which is why he's so comfortable here and why that this eventually was going to get done. But the fact that it's not going for another year is a good sign, although the Bengals would like to see him actually catch those touchdown passes thrown to him,
right,
like what happened in Oakland. Not a great start for AJ to his season, but I think we've learned over the years that is more rare, more of the exception, although a lingering issue. So let's wrap this up, of course, this week. Let's see, Tuesday night, Tyler Eifert joining us on Beyond the Stripes. There will be golf, although I'm a little nervous because they have the Uberdrome is thrown up in our back grassy area because it's Oktoberfest. Now, I don't know if the Uberdrome will be there. I wish we could try get out our 60 degrees and try to go over the Uberdrome. But we may have to work around some tenting behind us. But so it could get experimental.
Okay,
it could turn into more of a mini golf experience than anything, off the tent, under the windmill type scenario. But so make sure you check that out. You can always watch those; they're always archived up by the next morning, including some of our fun little mini clips. Last week we embarrassed ourselves and we did the whip and nay nay that Jeremy Hill taught us. And I don't think it's any coincidence, after you and I did the whip and nay nay, Jeremy Hill went on NFL Network the next day and officially retired it.
Right.
I mean, I think he saw that and said, if this is what it's come to, is these two, I mean, it's
we might
it's
as
over.
Well have put on a leather jacket and got on a wakeboard and jumped the shark.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, what it was.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what it was.
What for all you older BBP listeners.
Yeah.
We're and here for you younger too. BBP listeners, that's where that phrase comes from.
Yes.
Jumping the shark.
That's what it is.
Bad happy days.
Bad happy days. Who's the? Am I the Fonz or are you the Fonz? You're the Fonz. I'm like Ron Howard.
In that instance, we were both the Fonz and the people who decided to have the Fonz jump a shark.
Jump a shark. So Jeremy Hill said, "That's enough. I'm retiring this dance." So he broke out two new dances after his touchdowns in Oakland. So we'll have that. Can't quite unveil the guests for the next couple of weeks, but trust me, the names are big, and you're going to want to come down to Moreline. 7 o'clock every Tuesday, we're down there for our live show. Half party, half football. A lot of people drinking beer. It should be a good time. So make sure you come join us one of these weeks. Of course, every Tuesday, of course, during the day, this podcast posts all season. We'll have that. Continue to bring you more. Home opener, Sunday. Chargers come down, so I'm sure you all will be down there at Paul Brown Stadium. Should be a good week. So anyway, we got to get out of here. What do you think? San Diego, still we can still kind of go with a little West Coast flavor if we want to.
So the first thought I had was considering the changes we talked about earlier in the BBP. But see, I don't recall our playlist offhand. So changes in some West Coast.
I mean, you want to go Pac?
Of course.
Yeah?
What Adam Jones tweeted out on Tuesday, Tupac Tuesdays.
Tupac Tuesdays?
I mean, I figure we should just all loop it together.
We should
bring it all together.
He's the man of the hour. Everyone waiting to see. So, all right, we can always do that. We can always. You know what I was? You know what I was thinking, which we won't do. Think. You know, we'll think. Let's just do this, because after the first week, yeah, it was a blowout, but it was kind of the Raiders. I was thinking, hold on, by Wilson Phillips. Just hold on. Does everybody hold on for one more day? All right, let's wait before we go pronouncing them Super Bowl champs. But because that song is god awful, I will not do that to our listeners. So instead, so you get to hear actually some good music on the way out, we'll bring in Tupac. So thank you, Tupac, for joining us. For myself and my partner, Jim O, we will talk to you next week.
Come on. I see no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get it back to the kids, who the hell cares? One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship them, don't let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brothers, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but things change. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Damn, yeah.
Oh, come on. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. The way it is. Oh, yeah.
I see no changes. All I see is racist faces. Misplaced hate makes disgrace the racist. We under. I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the wasted. Take the evil out the people, they'll be acting right. Cause both black and white and smoke a crack tonight. And the only time we chill is when we kill each other. It takes guilt to be real time to heal each other. And although it seems evident, we ain't ready to see a black president. It ain't a secret or concealed a fact. The penitentiary's packed and it's filled with blacks. But some things will never change. Try to show another way, but staying in the dope game. Now tell me what's a mother to do. Being real don't appeal to the brother in you. You gotta operate the easy way.
I made a G today.
But you made it in a sleep.